DW Africa Link.
In the wake of the recently signed peace agreement between Rwanda and the Democratic Republic of Congo, questions are mounting over what, and more importantly, who has been left out of the negotiations. While the accord emphasizes regional cooperation, security coordination, and economic development, it makes no mention of the widespread atrocities committed against civilians in eastern Congo. Communities devastated by displacement, mass killings, and sexual violence remain unacknowledged, their suffering omitted from the diplomatic record. Already, human rights defenders have slammed the deal, saying that it will only benefit the United States, keen to exploit Congo's mineral resources. In this podcast, we will explore whether it was a peace or a business deal. In whose interest is the peace agreement? Is the peace deal a pathway to justice or merely a framework for normalizing trade and reopening access to mineral-rich territories? That's what's coming up. Stay tuned. My name is Josephine Mahachi. Welcome to Africa Link, the podcast that connects you to the stories that matter from Africa.
Africa Link, every weekday here on DW.
Rwanda and the Democratic Republic of Congo signed a peace agreement with Washington to end fighting that has killed thousands, with the two countries pledging to work together and end insecurity that has ravaged Eastern DRC for more than three decades. The agreement comes after the M23, an ethnic Tutsi rebel force linked to Rwanda, sprinted across the mineral-rich east of the DRC this year, seizing vast territory, including the key city of Goma. The deal, negotiated through Qatar before Trump took office, does not explicitly address the gains of the M23 in the area, torn by decades of on-off war, but calls for Rwanda to end in courts defensive measures it has taken. I have lined up political analysts and law experts who will break down for us the agreement signed between Rwanda and the DRC. Before we delve into the details of the peace deal, I'd like you to hear first what U.S. President Donald Trump said alongside the foreign ministers from the DRC and Rwanda, Therese Kayikwamba and Olivia Nduhungirehe. Let's listen to this.
Today, the violence and destruction comes to an end, and the entire region begins a new chapter of hope and opportunity, harmony, prosperity, and peace. African Union, we just spoke about that, and I look forward to having them representatives here when we do the official meeting, and that'll be sometime in July, and we look forward to it. And you better be.
If you stay on board, I think there are so many perspectives that we can transform our partnerships through and that can usher in an era of prosperity, of growth, and of shared bilateral relationships that go well beyond the challenges that we've shared together and that can at least or finally focus on the potential and of the wealth that we can share. So again, our heartfelt gratitude to you on my behalf, but more importantly, on behalf of the people of the Democratic Republic of Congo. Thank you so much.
We believe that it's because of your leadership and your steadfast commitment to this process, with also a new approach of economic integration, regional economic integration, which is important to allow Rwanda and DRC working together, because this is a very rich region with cross-border trade, with the minerals, with natural wealth. So with the U.S. Standing by side by side with Rwanda and DRC, we believe that we will achieve a long-time peace.
Okay, now that you've heard them, there is a lot of optimism in their words, isn't it? It's now time for me to introduce the analysts I've invited to this podcast. Jean-Baptiste Gasominari is a lawyer and political analyst. He is currently a Congolese refugee living in Rwanda. Also joining the discussion is Gonza Mugi, a political commentator in Kigali. Hello, gentlemen. Welcome to both of you.
When you read the whole document, it addresses most of the issues. that Rwanda wanted it addressed in order to solve the conflict between the two countries. As far as Rwanda's main concern, which is the FDLR rebel group, the agreement endorses the concept of operations which had been agreed in Angola in October last year, and it provides a framework on how to go about it. The important point is, will it be possible to implement what the very ambitious concept of operations in 90 days? That will be seen depending on how much effort is put there in implementing the deal. What it does not mention, even though it talks about in the preamble, is dialogue between inter-Congolese forces, especially the MP3 rebels and the Congolese government, which it says is being addressed via the Doha peace process, which is ongoing. Even though not much information has been provided publicly, how far the two sides have gone into negotiating. For the issue you raised about human rights and accountability, I think that is up to the Congolese government in the internal peace process that will go on, how they would address those issues. That's why I think they talk about conditional integration of forces of armed groups into the Congolese army. But when it comes to addressing human rights violations, I think the most important part is to achieve full peace, which is agreed upon by the Congolese, disarmament of all groups, but also creating the Congolese government army that is itself disciplined, because there are reports that show that it has also not been performing well as far as respect of human rights is concerned. But achieving peace is the first step before you talk about justice. I think there are forces who think they are not being engaged, who saw the conflict in the East as an opportunity to negotiate a new political order in Kinshasa, but also to access resources in positions of power, who are not happy that they tend to be not included much. That is up to how the Congolese process will emerge. Possibly, they could be ignored, because even before, there have been deals where Rwanda and the Congolese government agree on the way forward, and the rest of the opposition and civil society are ignored. I hope the Doha process is going to be inclusive enough so that other players in the Congolese politics are not ignored like in the past, if we are going to achieve sustainable peace in the region.
Right. Now, coming to you also, Gasominari, just to find out your own impression of this peace deal signed between the two countries.
Well, my own impression is that, first of all, the signing of this peace deal is a step forward, because both parties have come together, negotiated a peace agreement. Then after negotiating, they agreed on it and signed it. So this is a step forward. Of course, people may have remarks and comments to make about it, including what you have just mentioned, the human rights violation and justice that is to follow. I think this is justice is a matter of sovereignty of a state, and it can also be delegated to an international tribunal that will try the crimes if they were committed. So I think it's the responsibility of the government of DRC to, while implementing this peace agreement that they have concluded with Rwanda, to see if in the process there were violation of human rights, and address those issues through justice mechanism, being it national, it will be carried out by national jurisdiction, or if it is to be carried out by international tribunals and courts, then in that case, it's also the responsibility of the government of DRC to request such intervention of an international tribunal, or the existing one, which is ICC, which has jurisdiction over crimes committed on the territory of DRC, because DRC is party to Rome Statute instituting ICC. So I think the issue of justice was not ignored. What was agreed upon those points that were in contention between both parties. You know, they have been accusing each other. Rwanda has been accusing DRC for harboring a genocidal militia, which is FDLR, for over three decades now, and that this militia was organizing attacks from the territory of DRC with the support of the government forces. So this issue was tackled, and they agreed on the eradication of FDLR militia. So DRC has been accusing Rwanda of backing AFC M23. As my colleague has just mentioned, it is mentioned in this peace agreement that the Doha negotiation or the Doha process, which includes the government of DRC and AFC M23, will continue, and upon completion, whatever that will be signed between AFC M23 and the government of DRC will be part of the agreement signed between Rwanda and DRC.
Before we talk about the Americans maintaining the pressure and really what others think about this deal, Gonzaga, the M23 stated that the agreement is not binding on its operations or commitment to protect its communities. What do you make of their position on the agreement?
Yeah, it makes sense for them to say that because they have their own reasons. Some of the reasons they are fighting are addressed, especially the return of refugees, the resettlement of displaced persons, and the elimination of FDLR, because the FDLR is at the root cause of the problems for which the M23 is trying to solve. But also there are other attacks. For instance, in South Kivu, there are still attacks by some Mai-Mai groups now called Wazalendo, by even the coalition of the government. I think it makes sense for the M23 to commit to continue to defend the populations, especially the Banyamulenge in South Kivu, whose territory continues to be attacked. But that would depend also on the government side. If the government of Kinshasa commits and is able to control its forces on the ground, not attack the M23, I would think it will hold, because largely the ceasefire that was announced weeks ago is holding, mainly even though there are skirmishes in some territories. The other point is that they are trying to force that to imply to the world that they are a sovereign force making their own decisions, which should be engaged directly rather than engaged by proxy or through Rwanda, which makes sense, because at the end of the day, they are the actual fighters, they are the actual interested party. So they have to be part of an agreement they signed themselves and is binding to them.
Right. But dozens of marauding militia groups, Gasominari, operate within the DRC and are not represented in the deal. Where does this leave the two signatories, Rwanda and DRC, to implement the agreement as expected?
Well, I do not share these views, though, because when somebody says that there are multiple armed groups in the Eastern DRC, I think it's just a misrepresentation, and which is done purposely by people who say so. Because all the forces fighting in the Eastern DRC, except AFC M23, they are all armed, trained, recruited, and supported by the government. They are now regrouped under what they call Wazalendo. So they used to be different militia, which were mostly tribal militia, because each tribe had its own militia, which was claiming that it is supporting or that they are there to protect the interest of their communities. But today, all those groups were put under one umbrella called Wazalendo and given command by the government of DRC. So I think whatever they do, the DRC government should take full control and full responsibility of what they do, being crimes they commit, anything that they do, because they are recruited and armed by the government. So they cannot claim that they are separate groups that are operating independently. That actually amounts to misrepresentation. That's why I said I do not share these views. So as for AFC M23, it's also another group which is there. It has a leadership and also should be accountable to whatever is said that it has been done by them. But hiding in this concept that, you know, they are marauding groups that are not controlled and that escapes the control of the state authority, I think this should not be an argument that people who bring forward, because whatever done by the government and their associates, the government should take full responsibility. The same should be on the side of AFC M23.
Nobel Peace Laureate Denis Mukwege castigated the deal, saying it only benefits Rwanda and the US and forgot victims of violence. What do you make of his position about this agreement?
It does not benefit only Rwanda and the US. It also benefits Congo because it seeks to bring peace. And victims of violence cannot get justice when there is no peace. That's number one. Number two, I think Mukwege is one of the politicians who would prefer that Congo and Rwanda do not have good relations. It was when he contested for elections recently in Congo, he was one of the politicians who used anti-Rwanda sentiments to gain support. So it would depend on the motive. Maybe if there is bigger inter-Congolese dialogue, the Mukweges and others should also be involved as part of finding a long-term solution. But also in conflicts like this, there's when you pursue justice, then it compromises the effort to bring peace. Because when you look at long-running conflicts, most serious commanders, maybe the armies may have been involved in some crime here and there. So if you pass to them for justice, at times they refuse to surrender their weapon and continue fighting. We have seen it in many conflicts on the continent. So at times, that's why to end most conflicts, there have been amnesty processes. If you don't provide for that provision to provide amnesty and a reconciliation mechanism, instead you pass of wanting to jail officials you hate, because justice is both ways. It cannot look at one. It cannot look at one side. It can't be one sided. Given that the M23 are the victors on the ground in the east, if there were to be justice, it would be on their terms. So I don't know what Mukwege would say on that. So pursuing peace requires compromises. It requires compromises, but also long-term reconciliation among the communities, especially in conflicts which have been based on ethnic differences.
All right. Another million-dollar question that we are seeing all over on social media platforms, and also it's coming from what media outlets say, that is this a peace deal or business deal? Because already U.S. President has touted his buddies to take over Rubaya mines, and he also warned of penalties if the deal is not implemented. As we wrap up our discussion, you can respond to that first, Kasominaris.
Yeah, I think it is both. It's a peace deal and a business deal at the same time, because you cannot do business where there is no peace, unless if you are trading weapons and ammunition. But for any business to be set up, any economic viability to be available, people need peace. So you start by signing a peace deal, then that peace deal brings in business. So that's why I'm saying it is both. So the objective is, of course, to do business, but an environment that is conducive to do business is peace. And so that is why they signed the peace deal, to be able to have peace, then do business.
Right. And Gonzaga, your own opinion on that as well as we wrap up the discussion?
I think it's very good and impressive of the United States government and President Trump, because they bring out the issues which are usually kept secret they put them on the table, that there are always economic interests in any conflict. So if agreements are reached and the conditions are given to powerful interests, that means there are sufficient forces for peace in the region. At the moment, economic exploitation goes on, but goes on informally. It's the one which helps support all the Wazalendo militias, the different of them. But if proper contracts are awarded by the government in Kinshasa, given to in the situation where the government can gain taxes and other legitimate sources from exploitation of Congolese resources, that means the interests supporting peace are more powerful than the interests supporting war. In the long term, it would be very good for the region. Rwanda and other neighboring countries have permanent economic interests in the Congo. They will always be there. So formalizing them is very good. And if you remember very well, before November 2021, when the relations between President Tshisekedi and President Kagame were very good, one of the main discussions was how to improve and modernize the mineral supply chain, especially making sure that the mining respects human rights. All those mines we talk about, most of them use child labor. They don't follow the standards, environmental standards, and so on. Also, the how to process and improve the minerals. One of the reasons why Africa is underdeveloped is because most of our natural resources are taken abroad for processing instead of being processed or added value here in Africa. This is a part of the elements that will be discussed upon. Those who are saying that the Congo are sold off to the United States, I think they are being disingenuous. They haven't read the full document. And there's nowhere where they are saying the U.S. will access the minerals for free. No. Already there are other people involved. The Chinese have a lot of concessions in the Congo. Even some Americans do have concessions. Improving the whole situation so that the resources that we have in this part of the world are beneficial for our development would be very, very important. And you can't do that without financial and technological support from a country like the United States. Powerful interests have peace at heart. As Gasiminari said, you can't have trade without peace in the first place. So it will give an incentive for the forces fighting to play a role. I think African companies will work with the U.S. companies. Most of the times, you don't expect an American to go into the mines. They will have to subcontract or enter into partnerships with local farmers, and which will be more beneficial than having militias controlling those resources.
Baptiste Kasominari, a lawyer and political analyst, and Gonza Mugi, a political commentator in Kigali, many thanks for joining us. At the Africa Link podcast, we always look across the continent to see how the stories we are dealing with play out or at times even overlap. Still on this topic, the agreement drew wide but not universal praise. Bintou Keita, a senior UN official in the DRC, said in quotes, "marks a decisive step toward peace and stability," while Germany hailed the excellent news and called for implementation. French President Emmanuel Macron also praised the historic step forward peace must hold. UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres praised the peace agreement between the DRC and Rwanda, calling it a significant step towards de-escalation. The African Union described the peace deal as a significant milestone in achieving peace in the deeply troubled region. One can hope that lasting peace returns to Eastern DRC, allowing the Congolese to enjoy life and the benefits of their natural resources. This peace agreement, if implemented effectively, could be a turning point for the region, bringing about positive change and a brighter future. A game changer. Well, that's it for this edition of Africa Link. Remember, you are not just a listener, but a crucial part of our community, and your engagement can shape the direction of our discussions. We value your insights and encourage you to share your thoughts with us. Your perspective is crucial in understanding the implications of this peace agreement. Remember, you can find all of the Africa Link podcast episodes on Spotify, Apple, or wherever you listen to your podcasts from. This episode was co-produced and edited by Isaac Mugabi. My name is Josephine Mahachi. Thanks for listening. Until the next one, it's bye for now.
DW, made for minds.